This episode of Literary Treks is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Literary Treks, our dedicated books and comics show here on Trek FM. I am one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as he is always these days, is Dan Gunther. Dan, how are things going for you these days?
Not too bad. Pretty busy and but keeping busy and generally enjoying things. Tiring day today, but again, really happy to be here to talk about Deep Space Nine, my favorite.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that, is that a new recording room? I feel like I see a bunch of like orbs behind you and what are you doing on Bajor today?
Well, you know, basically the book we're going to be talking about is kind of a season finale, and as you know, season finales are big deals and you kind of got to go all out. I'm at a monastery. The Vedics let me record here in the room with the orbs. I was really surprised. They're very accommodating.
Wow, that is really nice. Well, I figured, I guess you're there because you're going to, you know, be asking for advice from the Order of Prophecy and Change to see what's coming next for Deep Space Nine and the relaunch?
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I've consulted the orbs about the upcoming books, especially. They haven't been forthcoming with covers, though, which is unfortunate. I was looking forward to some new Seekers art maybe this week, but no such luck.
Oh, yeah. You know, that is something that I was really frustrated with, too, is that we didn't get just anything there for anything that's coming out. You know, we got Sacraments of Fire, and, you know, we got that cover, and... You know, just kind of waiting at this point to see, I guess, the rest of the covers that we'll be getting for the books coming out this year. And there's some great ones coming out. I mean, Seekers books, Kirsten Beyer, you know, Greg Cox. So it's going to be a great end to the year. And even through, of course, through the summer, it's going to be fantastic with some Dayton Ward and David R. George III. So, man, I can't wait to see what happens. So.
Definitely, yeah. No, we're all just kind of sitting on the edge of our seat waiting to see what's coming next because there's some really good stuff on the horizon.
Well, Dan, I was thinking about this, you know, since we don't have any news, what are some of the things that you're really looking forward to? I mean, maybe for the rest of the year, books and comics-wise that are coming up, what are some of the things that are really just kind of standing out to you? You're like, oh, I can't wait to get my mitts on that.
Well, there's always, you know, always a lot of good stuff coming up. Seekers, I've mentioned, you know, a pretty interesting start to that series last year. I'm interested to see where they go with this. And, of course, the New Frontier ebooks. It's been so long since we've had New Frontier that I'm really excited to see, you know, what that's all about. Mm-hmm. And kind of one of the oddball that releases this year, I'm kind of looking forward to, is that autobiography of James T. Kirk that they're putting out. That looks like it could be pretty cool.
I totally forgot about that coming out, but that does look pretty fun. You know, I'm actually looking forward to, you know, comics wise, I'm kind of looking forward to the Green Lantern crossover to see what happens there. It's so off the wall that I'm really excited to see that. You know, I obviously I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that I'm really looking forward to Sacraments of Fire mm-hmm. to finally see some more Deep Space Nine. But as we know, it's going to be leading into that Ascendant storyline. And as we're basically there almost with wrapping up Unity, there's a few more books to get through. But that's where all of a sudden it just kind of cuts off, and then we pick up later off in the story. So I'm really looking forward to finally seeing exactly what happened. But I mean, geez, we've got a Titan novel with mm-hmm. James Swallow. We've got more Voyager with Kirsten Beyer. So this is just, I mean, it's a fantastic year so far for Star Trek books. And not only that, but it's been so diverse this year, which I love as well. I mean, think about that. New Frontier, Seekers, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, TOS. I mean, and we're going to get The Next Generation with Dayton Ward's Armageddon's Arrow. So what a fantastic year for all representations of all the different series we've had. It's awesome.
Definitely. Yeah, a very, very strong year in Treklit. Uncertain Logic by Christopher Bennett. Mm-hmm. I think moving that Enterprise story forward, just excellent. Like, lots of really cool continuations into, you know, corners of the Star Trek universe that need to be explored. So,
yeah, definitely. Well, it's going to be an exciting year as we wrap up here with Literary Treks, and I'm excited for all the books and comics that we've got coming out for you guys. And most exciting that we've gotten to over 100 episodes now, and we are finally this year going to wrap up the Deep Space Nine relaunch, which is really exciting to have finally gotten there. And Dan and I haven't quite figured out what we're going to tackle next, but there's some great places. We may try some of the smaller series that we can jump in and out of, but we'll let you know as soon as we know where we're going to be going next. Well, Dan, I am very excited. I remember when this book came out. In fact, nobody will be able to see this on the podcast. This is bad podcasting, but I'm holding up in front of you. I actually own the physical hardback of Star Trek Unity, and it's one of the few Star Trek books that I still own. One, because it's one of the few Deep Space Nine books in hardback. And two, this is really the wrap-up. This is like the season finale of season 8 of Deep Space Nine. And I couldn't let this one go. And I'm glad I didn't, because it was great to be actually in a physical hardback Star Trek book, because we don't get these anymore.
Yeah, it's really sad. Some of those hardcovers are really beautiful. I owned the hardcover at one time. I don't tend to get rid of my Star Trek books, so it's somewhere, it's in some box somewhere, but I have no idea where, which you know, is really sad, because yeah, this is a beautiful novel, definitely mm-hmm. worth owning in hardcover when it first came out, and the cover art is just gorgeous. I love that cover.
It is amazing cover art. I mean, I'm with you. It's one of my favorite parts of the book. I know that kind of sounds silly, but I really do enjoy that cover. I think it's really fantastic. And so I'm just so excited that we are finally here and we get to talk about this book. And so wanted to just kind of remind everybody where we are. And so I was just going to read the blurb, because it kind of puts us in the mindset of the book. And it's: in 2001's critically acclaimed Avatar novels, author S.D. Perry set the tone for the course for the continuation of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, a controversial television phenomenon hailed by TV Guide as the best acted, written, produced, and altogether finest incarnation of Star Trek. And I'll add, it'll never be eclipsed. Since then, the DS9 saga has grown in complexity and momentum, acting as an ever-growing audience to novels about which one reviewer raved, in these pages, DS9 truly lives again. Now, following her triumphs with Avatar and Rising Sun, S.D. Perry returns for a landmark tale celebrating DS9's 10th anniversary year. On the eve of Bajor's formal entry into the Federation, First Minister Shakar was assassinated, derailing the induction and plunging the planet and Deep Space Nine into chaos. Investigating the murder revealed the presence of a parasitic conspiracy threatening not only Bajor's future with the Federation, but its very survival of both. At the same time, the fracturing of Bajor's theology has put its people on the threshold of a startling transformation, and the consequences now rest on the shoulders of Colonel Kira Nerys, who months ago defied the religious authority of her planet by making public an ancient heretical text that challenged the very foundation of the Bajoran faith. Now, after a harrowing and heroic voyage of exploration in the Gamma Quadrant, the weary, wounded crew of the Starship Defiant is at last coming home. But the joy of their return is short-lived as the crew becomes swept up in the crisis aboard the station, with many of them confronting personal issues that force them to make life-altering choices. Among those is a grief-stricken Commander Ellis Vaughn, who reaches a crossroads in his life's journey and learns the true purpose for which he was touched by the prophets, as well as the ultimate fate of Captain Benjamin Sisko. And somewhere on Bajor, a child long awaited is about to be born.
I love that blurb because on my website, I actually reviewed this novel. And the way the schedule turned out, it was going to come out right around Christmas. And it actually ended up being a little later, January 3rd. But just that little tagline at the end, somewhere on Bajor, a child long awaited is about to be born. I was like, huh, some kind of cross-pollination of season here. But anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. They do kind of make it sound like, you know, the birth of, you know, like something like Jesus. Mm-hmm. And, so yeah, it's a really interesting thing to kind of see, with this book, just how everything is coming together. And this is really, as we said before, it's the ending of season 8, and it's the finale of all that they've kind of been working towards, all at the same time while pushing a new story kind of to the forefront as well. So kind of thinking back for you, Dan, what are some of the things that you noticed as reading Unity that were really hearkening back to, you know, where S.D. Perry started us with Avatar and then throughout the rest of this series so far?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, a lot of it is, you know, the character touchstones and thinking, like, even just in this kind of short series of novels, how far the characters have come and where they began their journey in Avatar. So, for example, we have Elias Vaughn, you know, finding the orb in the first books and getting set on this path and, you know, where he ends up now. And Ro, again, also, I thought was had a very important character arc through these novels. And where she ends up in this whole story is really, really cool. And just thinking about, like, the tone this novel sets, the season finales of Deep Space Nine were always really good at kind of closing a chapter, but also introducing a whole new set of things going on. I think, for example, you know, Odo being turned into a human by his people, you know, that was a big kind of chapter of his life coming to, you know, a temporary end, but an end. And then the end of that episode, he's looking at the transmission from Gowron, and he says, "The changelings, they revealed to me Gowron's a founder," and, you mm-hmm. know, it really sets off, you know, where the next chapter is going to go. And I feel a lot of that in this book as well. You know, there's a lot of resolution, a lot of closing of stories for these characters, but also a lot of jumping off points and hints of what's to come. So very very much following the mold of the Deep Space Nine season finale template, basically.
Yeah, it really does. You know, I was thinking back to the fact that the book, the Avatar series, really kind of starts off with Vaughn having the whole orb experience, and that's really what sets him off on this path, kind of brings him to Deep Space Nine. And so it was interesting to watch them kind of round out this with him having another orb experience that will bring, you know, Sisko back into the corporeal world. And I thought that was a nice touch, you know, the cyclical nature of things, you know, the way the story kind of recycled itself there was really interesting, but I thought was done well. Two, a lot of stories kind of close to like, you know, Char's storyline with his Bond mates, the fact that he's going to stay on Deep Space Nine. Those kind of things, at least at this point of the series too, Dax and Bashir kind of seem to have found some sort of equilibrium in their relationship. The O'Briens had gone back to Earth, and now they're going to Cardassia. You know, there's just a lot of things. Cassidy was pregnant. Now she's had the baby. Ben wasn't there, but now he's back. You know, all these things. It's like you started off in one place, and we've kind of given you some kind of resolution for those stories, but at the same time left it open to tell another story with the characters, as all good writers do. And I thought that was really nice. And then, two, something that really stuck out to me this time was just having Picard give Ro the uniform, because they have that conversation in Avatar. And, of course, now they, you know, have this little moment here. They don't even talk, but he's left the uniform there for her with a little note card. And I really like those little small elements that just create that conclusion type feeling. It's just really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was definitely a favorite moment for me. I have friends that will never forgive Ro for betraying Picard to the Maquis in that episode, but I really love her character, and I really love what they've done with her in the novels. Even getting together with Quark, as weird as that is.
I don't get that whatsoever. It doesn't. They still haven't sold me on that one. So
I don't know. Deep down, Quark's a romantic. I kind of get it, but it's still a little weird. But you know, all that aside.
It's a little weird.
Yeah, it is a little weird. All of that aside, though, I love what they've done with Ro. And this little touchstone of Picard sending her the uniform, just with, you know, like you said, without words, communicating so much to her that, you know, she's kind of regained his faith and trust, and that she should stay with Starfleet and stay where she is and do what she's doing. I absolutely love that. I thought that was an amazing moment.
Yeah, I really, really liked that. And I felt like it was just that small thing that, you know, that just kind of helped you, you know, see the characters grow. Or, you know, the fact that Kira is back in the Starfleet uniform by the end was nice as well. You know, we've seen her in it before. She looked great in it in the series. And now, you know, she's the captain. I just thought that that was really, really cool that we finally have really completed what Deep Space Nine kind of set out as, which was Bajor was going to be coming into the Federation. And that story is now complete. You know, Bajor is fully a member of the Federation of Planets at this point. And that was a nice resolution, because that is something that we don't get to see at all in the series. And that's where the books really add to, I think, the validity of the storyline, you know, because they actually complete something that they couldn't do in the series. They didn't end up having the time to do that with the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I get the feeling that a lot of people felt that Bajor joining the Federation would be the end of the story, and that would be, you know, they set it up in the series premiere that that's the mission of the Starfleet crew on Deep Space Nine, is to shepherd Bajor into the Federation, basically. And, you know, we really find out here that that's not the end of the story. That's just the end of this chapter and the beginning of a new chapter. And Bajor will see a lot of new challenges in its position as a Federation member.
Yeah, it's definitely going to have its own issues. And I think that creates a great storyline. And especially too, I mean, you think about this, the greatness of where you see Bajor kind of come to, and then they have a huge, huge part obviously in the fall as well with everything that happens there. And so, yeah, it's really interesting to kind of see all of this play out. And I would say that it's also a sad thing for me that we get to this point, because Deep Space Nine never quite lives up to this quality with its books, just because the storyline starts to get a little bit fractured. You get the World of Deep Space Nine books next, and it doesn't feel as cohesive. And then they're trying to ramp up for the Ascendant storyline, and then we don't get an actual finale to that. And then, of course, we just lose Deep Space Nine for a while, and then we jump time with Destiny and all that. And, you know, so it's never quite the same again. And that's always, we got to this point, and then I was like, oh yeah, it doesn't quite have the same impact as it did before. That is a little bit sad. So,
yeah, it kind of, it's almost, you could rate Star Trek novels on a hardcover scale, and this, this novel is worthy of being a hardcover. And we don't, you know, not to mention the fact that we just don't get hardcovers anymore after this, but you know, I don't want to really disparage the books that have come since, but none of them are really worth the hardcover treatment after this. It does feel like we've kind of, you know, peaked a little bit, and at least for the next few stories, you know, there are some very good stories in Worlds of Deep Space Nine. Some of them are some of my favorite stories, but it's just, like you said, the crew's separated, the story just feels different and not quite at the same level that we get here.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I do want to talk about, you know, one of the things that's really cool about this storyline is the fact that just like Deep Space Nine, the show, that we really do something that Deep Space Nine just excelled at, which was we took a idea from The Next Generation and we actually made it work. And, you know, so finally seeing the kind of resolution to the conspiracy episode from TNG was really interesting, and understanding who these parasites were in a much deeper level, I thought was really, really fascinating and really, really satisfying as a Star Trek fan.
Yeah. One of the things, like the conspiracy parasites, we don't see in the original episode, but we do in this, is them kind of unleashed on the general population and what kind of measures would have to be taken to counter that. And I love what this book does. And if you really think about it, the opening days of Bajor being in the Federation are marked by almost a military occupation by the Cardassians again. So you've got to wonder what the average Bajoran citizen who isn't privy to the information that we have, you really have to wonder what they're thinking. And wow, this joining the Federation thing, maybe this was not a good idea after all.
I get the feeling like we may have taken a step backwards at this point.
Hey, anybody remember that 60-year occupation? No, just me? Okay.
Okay. I mean, I thought that maybe we might want to rethink this strategy, but okay, it's fine. Yeah.
Anybody notice that the guy in charge looks and sounds exactly like Gul Dukat?
Yeah, that's not creepy at all.
We're fine with that.
Yeah, it's totally normal. What I loved about that and the way that they do the storyline, and obviously it's contrivance of the story that Cardassians are kind of immune to what happens here with the parasites, that they don't want it, you know, the parasites try to take them over and then they can't. I think that what it does, though, is that it really gives you the opportunity to see the growth of Bajor, because Bajor actually handles this pretty well on the most part. And I think that was a really great storyline to have, because this is part of the Deep Space Nine saga, is watching the Bajorans go from being a people that, you know, would completely hate the Cardassians to actually being okay with asking for their help. You know, and just put that in real world terms with, you know, take World War II type people and put all that together in your brain and just think about that for a second. That's basically what we're talking about. I think it's a pretty powerful story to see play out in the book. And I love the fact that we explain these parasites. It kind of makes sense that they're related somehow, some way, whether it's genetic engineering, that's where we've gotten to in the book, but they're related to the Trill, and that makes for a really exciting story as well.
Yeah, that was a stroke of brilliance. I love the linking of those two species together because, you know, if you think about it, the parasites really are just a complete perversion of what the Trill are. So, you know, I would imagine that a lot of people would be very wary of the Trill, thinking that, you know, these worms are a parasitic thing that are taking over people, but it's really not. It's a joining of the two. But these parasites really are that fear made manifest, and they're scary as hell. Like, the idea of this parasite coming in and completely subsuming your personality, but wearing your face and using your voice is absolutely terrifying.
I really like the creepy, scary horror aspect to them. That's the one thing that works from the TNG episode, is that this really is a scary, creepy villain. And what they do here with the novels is actually expound on that and bring what worked and take away all that didn't in that episode and really make something that's exciting, freaky, and at the same time, it's going to bring us to Trill about a species that, you know, we know very little about, and so I'm excited to see that as well. I'm just glad that we're getting the opportunity to learn about things that we kind of wanted to know more about with Deep Space Nine, and you know, we know a little bit about Trill. We've been there once, but this is a great storyline for us to be able to kind of explore more deeply. And there's a whole great storyline in there too about how in the end secrets kind of destroy things. And that makes for a really great storyline as well that we're going to get as we move forward with the Worlds of Deep Space Nine books. And we actually visit Trill and see how this kind of breaks a lot of things down in that society.
Definitely. Yeah. No, I loved the whole linking of the secretiveness of Trill to this whole storyline, because, you know, we've known they're a pretty secretive race. A lot of, you know, most of the Federation didn't even know they were a joined species until very recently. So kind of explaining that secretiveness through this storyline, I thought was really excellent. Really great idea.
Well, you know, one of the things that this book does, obviously, is really bring the emissary back. You know, the path of the emissary and the prophets are brought forefront here in a lot of ways. And the prophet storyline has been going along for quite a while in the story. It starts off with the discovery of this text that really shakes up the Bajoran religion. And then, of course, you know, with the emissary gone, I mean, Bajor had kind of lost its spokesperson, and it's something they look towards. And so I wanted to just talk about those two things specifically, because, and this is going to be, especially with the Sisko part, it's going to be kind of where the storyline goes. Because, so Dan, if you're going to bring Sisko back, it's got to be big, right?
You would assume so, yeah. I mean, this is a character who was brought into the wormhole or the celestial temple supposedly to be prepared for some big task. Now, you know, his previous task was to defeat Dukat in the fire caves and banish the Pa Wraith. But we really get the feeling at the end of Deep Space Nine that he's going to the wormhole to be prepared for something else that he has to do. And will we find out what that is? We haven't yet. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's... okay, it's a big deal, because when Ben leaves, he's told Cassidy that I'm leaving, I'm gonna come back, but the prophets have much more for me to do. Sarah tells him that, you know, the prophet that was his mother. And then just the very last page of the book, it's setting up this whole idea. And it says, Ben says this to himself, and where I'll soon be needed. The prophets had revealed as much before letting him go. What was happening and what was going to happen to Bajor and its people, this was of great importance to them. His role wouldn't be easy. He'd need the help of old friends and new friends, Kira, of course, and Dax and Eli, who'd been set on a course by the prophets that led him to Deep Space Nine and sent him to meet Benny in the temple, because he'd need help himself, but also to remind Ben of his own humanity, to show him how to follow his life back to his own people. And so it really, the very end of, I mean, the last page of this book seems to be setting up this kind of epic storyline that Ben has come back to do something really important. Mm-hmm. And then Ben doesn't do anything.
Yeah. Now, based on, you know, this and then what I recently reread in the Worlds of Deep Space Nine, it seems they're really foreshadowing the whole Ascendant storyline, which, of course, we never got. And the other thing is I haven't reread them in a long time yet, and I don't really remember a lot about Warpath, Fearful Symmetry, or the Soul Key. I don't know that he does anything really big in those that I remember.
The only thing that I was able to really find that, and I was just perusing Memory Beta because I was trying to remember because it's been so long, but I just couldn't remember anything really happening mm-hmm. for him when he comes back and what happens for him. Spoiler alert, if you haven't read these books, anyone, they're years old, so... But he comes back, and then following that return, he spends a lot of time with his wife and his new daughter, preparing for the return to Bajoran space of the Mysterious Ascendants. He also is with Kira after she's attacked by Tyranitar, and he's with her as she's basically experiencing this whole... And one of the strangest things ever in any Star Trek book that I've ever read, which is in Warpath. I remember that book just being a complete mind frack for me, trying to figure out exactly what was going on, because it's the Ascendants and the Ewok and this whole strange storyline. And yeah, that was weird. And then he works roughly for a little while at the Bahala, temple. And then the next time we see him, he's just pissed because he feels like the prophets have abandoned him. So there's this whole missing storyline. And the character of Sisko just, I feel like, really got the short shrift, when it came to this guy came back. And then we get the feeling that something's going to happen. And nothing happens.
Yeah. Now I'm really... because. You know, they hint about this whole Ascendant storyline, and of course, it seems we're getting that from David R. George both later this year and next year with his two novels, next Deep Space Nine novels coming out. I'm really hoping that, that's in there, because, after that whole missing period, and again, spoiler alert, for people who haven't read those novels, they're a little more recent, the ones that come after. There's a lot of changes. I mean, Kira, for example, is no longer in Starfleet. She's a Vedic in the Bajoran religion. And so something big happened there. Ro is now captain of Deep Space Nine. I really want that story. And I'm really hoping that it gives Sisko's return here more meaning than it has at the moment, because like you said, nothing really came of it, so I'm really hoping something vindicates that.
Yeah, exactly, and because it's an honestly an unsatisfying return. Mm-hmm. I feel like in some ways hopefully they knew what they were going to do, but at least the way it came off with what we have now, we have no idea what David R. George is going to do. But it's like the writers didn't know what to do with him, so they didn't do anything with him. Mm-hmm. And I can understand, because the idea of Sisko, who's come back from the prophets, who's been in a place where there's he literally in this book was in more places than one at the same time. So he existed as the prophets do, where he was really outside space and time. He could be wherever he wanted, whenever he wanted, in a very ethereal, strange, godlike way. And what do you do with that when he comes back? Because that's a tough thing to write towards. That's a really tall order, I think. And he comes back pretty cool in this book. You know, he brings a bunch of Jem'Hadar that he had the prophet sent back with him, in the, you know, sixth season of Deep Space Nine. So that was fantastic as well. So he comes back with a vengeance. I mean, it almost kind of reminded me of the way, you know, they talk about Jesus will come back, that, you know, it's not going to be the meek and mild Jesus. It's going to be the one with a sword, you know, and Ben kind of comes back with that, with a bunch of Jem'Hadar kicking some serious ass, you know? and then, yeah, we just don't get anything else. And I'm glad David is writing the storylines, David R. George III, because he wrote the other storylines, so I think he'll be the one that'll best be suited to kind of make it all fit together. Mm-hmm. Because right now, we're definitely missing some serious puzzle pieces. Yeah. And it's just been disappointing, because I think Sisko was one of the things that made him stand apart was that emissariness that he had. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that whole side of him. And now that that's been taken away, to me, he's just another captain. You know, like, you've kind of taken away what Ira Stephen Bear and all the rest of the writers had instilled in this captain that had made him different. Yeah. And now he's just, you know, another captain.
Mm-hmm. And it's really too bad, because I feel like that emissariness could really be used. And I think a really good writer could, you know, really take that and just do amazing things with it. I love the moment when Sisko does come back into the, you know, quote unquote real world. And he faces down the spawn mother, they call her, of these parasites. And I just, the line he has is so Sisko-like. And he, you know, he tells her that it's over, your campaign, your hatred, your time, it ends here now. She's like, you know, what is this? It's not a spawn mother. You know, why could she hear its mind? Why could she hear its thoughts? And it gets closer and closer. And she's thinking, like a meat being in appearance, it walked toward her from the nothingness, its features becoming clearer as it neared. Dark and human, meat, but the eyes. It drew closer, looming ever larger as it approached. It was vast, she saw now, vast as space. Its brown face filled her perception, filled the void itself. And then it spoke. You picked the wrong planet, it said. And she felt her first glimmer of doubt. It was also her last.
Yeah, it's
how cool
epic.
A character is that?
It is epic. And,
so good.
Oh, God. And I think that's the hard thing is that, you know, Sisko, really at that point, he's a superhero. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not a Starfleet captain. I think maybe that's what they didn't understand what to do with him.
Yeah. And I feel like you could do it subtly enough that he's not like a Q or something like that. But just, you know, you get this, you know, you imagine every once in a while that, like, did he just do that? I think he just did that, you know? And that would be so cool. Like, what a great character that would be. But
yeah. And it's gone now because, you know, he's no longer the emissary of the prophets at all. You know, he still has a connection with Bajor, and he always will, but that has been stripped away, and I'm really disappointed. Honestly, that is probably one of the biggest disappointments with the Deep Space Nine relaunch and where the writers took the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's just something about those Deep Space Nine writers where they understood how to make the lines between mysticism and Star Trek work together. Mm-hmm. And the writers maybe just couldn't figure out how to do that. I don't know. Yeah. But I know these writers and they're good. So I feel like you just needed to really think of a good reason for bringing him back. And it's like maybe they had one and then we just have never seen it.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll actually see it now.
Yeah, no, hopefully. I'm kind of given to understand that, you know, the big push behind this storyline of the Deep Space Nine relaunch was Marco Palmieri, the editor at the time. And unfortunately, right, you know, as this story's kind of getting off the ground was when, you know, there was kind of a shuffling of people at Pocketbooks and he was no longer there. And I always wonder if he had this kind of story plotted out vaguely and or not, you know, did he take that with him? You know, does somebody have his notes that say what he had in mind, or maybe he didn't, but was still going to, you know, conceptualize it if he was still there? I don't know. I would imagine he had at least a direction that he wanted to go. And then when he's gone, it's just no longer that, you know, he's no longer the driving force. And unfortunately, this kind of got lost along the way there.
I think you're right. I think that is really the thing where this did get lost. And then, of course, you know, they had they were connecting, you know, Deep Space Nine and with where the 24th century universe was. And, you know, I always wonder if David R. George had a conversation at all with Marco Palmieri to kind of see what the idea was, you know, so that they could be working that in when they could. Who knows? I don't know. It's just it's a sad thing to me because, you know, Sisko is my favorite captain, my favorite character in Deep Space Nine. And I miss that specialness about him. And then, of course, you know, what I've been saying for a very long time, Sisko needs to be an admiral. And they keep offering him admiralships and he keeps turning them down. Mm-hmm. I really do, you know, I think that's what needs to happen with him. I know we have Riker as an admiral, but I think, you know, Riker is obviously going to be on the Titan. Things are going to be different with the way that works, with where that storyline is going to go. I would really like to see just Sisko be the admiral and that area of the Federation be his, you know, dominion, we could say.
Well, maybe use another word, though.
Yeah, his sector of the galaxy. We'll just put it like that. So,
yeah, no, I mean, Archer's an admiral, Riker's an admiral. Come on, let's make Sisko an admiral. He's deserving of it.
Well, and it makes sense since they have offered him admiralship. They offered him one when he comes back in this book. He says no. He's offered a rear admiralship in the Typhon Pact books. And somewhere in that storyline, he doesn't say yes to that. So, I mean, this is already something that's been happening. I don't understand. We could definitely have this happen and I think it would just make sense at this point because he doesn't belong on the Robinson. We don't need another character on a starship doing exploration and stuff like that. We have too many other ships to do that. You know, you can have Dax do that on the Aventine. You've got the Enterprise. You've got Titan. You don't need that same storyline. And I think him and Ro working together on the station in conjunction with each other. I mean, she's the captain. And, you know, I think that would just be a really cool storyline as well. So,
yeah,
there's so much cool that could happen. I mean, what do I know?
No, that would be really great. I think, yeah, like I said, no other character is more deserving of it than him. And I mean, you know, Kirk said, don't let them promote you to Picard, not Sisko. He hasn't been tainted by that advice yet. Promote him. Let them promote you.
Well, one of the things that this storyline, starting with Avatar, does is the Uhulu texts. And for me, this was another disappointment because what I loved about the storyline in Deep Space Nine was that there was always the juxtaposition between the faith of Bajorans and the science of Starfleet. And there were episodes that sometimes kind of came down on one side or the other, but it always left you feeling like it was more up in the air. And nobody can really ever explain exactly what the prophets are And so that's where the faith came in. And I didn't really enjoy that there was this new text that came out that kind of demystified the prophets, because I liked that balance of, you know, the back and forth between the two. And I think I thought it was a little bit just more, it left it up to the reader. And this, I feel like, strips that away. And I was just disappointed with that, because Deep Space Nine was the only series that I felt like dealt really well at all with religion. And I felt like the writers here kind of took that away from the storyline. And they didn't need to, because they're going to have the Ewok, who are going to have their view of the prophets. And they don't need, I think, the Bajorans to already be like, oh, they're not really gods anymore, you know. I felt like it was one too many things to strip away the balance that Deep Space Nine had had between science and religion and all of those things. And they had struck a good chord, I thought. And I felt like the books just kind of took that away a little bit by doing this. And to me, that made me sad.
I can understand that, yeah. I kind of felt a little bit differently about the Ohalu texts. Because Deep Space Nine kind of always had that, you know, back and forth, are they prophets or are they wormhole aliens? And I think the answer to that is yes. And I think there's the saying, like, anything sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. And I think, you know, the prophets are really advanced and far above the Bajorans. So for them to see them as gods or prophets, I don't see a problem with that, because I think that, you know, to them they are. And I don't see that really changing, even though some of it's explained and that sort of thing. But, you know, I find the explanation kind of works a little bit both ways, because they are so far above the Bajorans, they might as well be prophets or they might as well be gods. At this point, what is your definition of a prophet or a god, if not someone or a being who is so advanced or so far above that, you know, they can do these things and see the things that they see and exist outside of linear time? And I don't know. I feel like the story of the Bajorans who remain in the faith and, you know, like we mentioned earlier, Kira later becomes a Vedic, you know. So for her, this hasn't, you know, she was the one that revealed the texts to the entire planet, and it didn't shake her faith. It just added another layer to it. And I think, I don't know, I think that story is kind of interesting. I'm interested to see where that goes.
And I like that a lot. I think what I was frustrated with is that it just made it a little bit more definite.
Mm.
You know, instead of leaving the mystery. And right. I just enjoyed the mystery part of it, because I think that's one of the things that makes faith faith, is that there's a lot that goes along with how I think about it and logical explanations and all of these things. But there is a sense of, okay, I can't explain everything, so I have to have the faith to move past that. You know, there is a point to where I have to move forward on faith. And that was just something I felt like you kind of lose here if you just tell us the secret, you know, like you see the man behind the curtain kind of thing. And they just played their hands, and it did take away, because now the question really isn't, are they prophets or whatever? It's, well, they're just aliens. You know, they took away the question really by giving us these texts and having them be so accurate. And these texts also say they're just aliens. So they take away the mystery. And I kind of miss the mystery part, because I felt like that was another thing that Deep Space Nine did, is that, you know, all other Star Trek just tells us things about the universe, you know, and how it is. And in Deep Space Nine, it wasn't afraid to not give us all the answers and make us figure those things out. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think I liked. So it's what makes Deep Space Nine, I think, more... it's just a more mythic story in general. So, yeah. But, I mean, either way, it was an interesting part of the storyline. It just doesn't work as well for me as it does for others. Mm-hmm.
And I suppose also with my my whole definition and wondering what makes a god or a prophet, you'd have to count Q as a god, and I don't think any of us are ready for that.
Yeah, exactly. That's a scary thought right there.
The universe is not so badly designed.
Yes. Well, one of the things that was really interesting is that I think one of the biggest themes of Deep Space Nine is time, and that time is linear, and that we move forward. And what we leave behind, we find out here, as Sisko tells Ellis from his orb experience, is the past. What we leave behind, and if we don't leave it behind, we just kind of live in it, as Sisko was the very first episode of the show. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of coming back and revisiting that idea with Ellis now. And I think it's really interesting because Ellis's experiences are very much like Sisko's. It's very traumatic. It has to do with his wife and his child. And he finds himself punishing himself by living in the moment of most pain. And I just love that the last episode of Deep Space Nine and its title, What We Leave Behind, is the truth that Sisko speaks to Ellis to get him to be able to move forward. It's, if you fail to leave behind the past, you're really just failing to live. And I think that's a really, really awesome place to be and kind of wrap this book up with, because it connects this series with what was so important in the first run of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I absolutely love the symmetry of Sisko being the one to teach that lesson in this book after, you know, having to struggle to learn it from the prophets in Emissary so many years ago. Yeah, I just, that image, as soon as, while I was reading it, and as soon as it occurred to me what they were doing, I just had a huge grin on my face, and I love that symmetry. It's beautiful.
Well, and it flows right into this whole other idea, too, that Sisko talks about with Ellis, is that love is a verb, you know. We don't destroy relationships. We don't bury them. We don't do any of those things. That love and relationships are always in motion, a lot like the Force. And the future is, you would say. Yeah, exactly. And that they do change over time, and that they take work. It takes active work, because love is a verb. Mm-hmm. And those relationships that we have with people are verbs, because we must act on them every single day to be connected. You know, if you don't talk to your significant other, you're not going to be connected. You know, if you're not interacting, if you're not doing things with them, creating shared experiences, any of that, if you're not sharing those verbs with them, those doing actions, you don't have a relationship. And I think those two things of leaving behind the past so that you can grow the future, and, you know, obviously we're not going to not learn our lessons from the past. That's not what we're saying. Mm-hmm. It's that you can't wallow in the past, or you're going to fail to live.
Right. Yeah, you can't get stuck there. You can't get mired in regret and feeling. I mean, you know, of course, like you said, learn from things. And, you know, regret can be a positive emotion if it causes you to learn from the mistakes you've made and make different choices in the future. But if all you're doing is sitting there and regretting and, you know, wallowing in sad emotions and memories, you're not going to move forward. And yeah, I think that's a very, very important lesson. And, you know, love and the relationships we have with people and the connections we have are just the best way of moving forward in life and creating change and growth and new experiences over your lifetime. And yeah, it requires energy. It requires work. It requires activity. You have to do it. You know, you can't just experience it. You have to make it and do it yourself.
what it reminds me very much of what Picard says in Generations, you know. But I rather believe that time is a companion that goes with us on the journey, and it reminds us to cherish every moment because it'll never come again. Mm-hmm. And what we leave behind is not as important as how we've lived. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the most beautiful and true statements that Star Trek has ever spoken.
Definitely.
And I love that it really dovetails into the story of Deep Space Nine and what they're doing here in Unity.
Yeah, no, I agree completely with you. I've used that quote a lot, and I absolutely love it. And maybe it doesn't have the same, you know, delivery that Malcolm McDowell's "Time is the fire in which we burn."
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a much better sentiment, and one that I think is really important. I think maybe "time is the fire in which we burn" must be the slogan of the Pa Wraiths.
Yeah. No kidding. Oh, goodness. Well, what would you rate this book now that we've kind of reached the end and talked a lot about it? I mean, and there's so much more that happens in this story. We haven't covered everything, so it's definitely something that everybody should go in and read because we haven't spoiled it all for you. Yeah, Dan, what would you end up rating this one since the season finale of season 8?
Well, like I've said, I really enjoyed this novel. It was definitely, and I think we've invented a new rating here, hardcover worthy. I think this
yeah.
story was very hardcover worthy. I really enjoyed this novel. The character moments, especially for, I'm going to say, Kira, Ro, and Elias Vaughn, I think just have some of the greatest character arcs and moments in this. And it's got a return to the whole prophet vision of, you know, Sisko as Benny Russell, which I loved. I loved that episode, Far Beyond the Stars. So this book has a lot of things that I really, really enjoy. It's always been one of my favorites of the Deep Space Nine relaunch. And I think if I have to give it a rating, it's going to be one emissary overpowering the Spawn Mother.
That's a good rating right there. I think one of the things for me about this book is that it reminds me that the storyline doesn't go where it needs to go next. That we never get the resolution to where they've been building towards for the next season. But that I need to stop discounting that against the book because it's not its fault. The Return of Sisko is badass. I mean, you know, there's so much great storyline, so many great storylines in here that kind of culminate and then push forward for the next season. So yeah, this book is hardcover worthy. I think that should be the rating. It is worthy of being in hardcover and wrapping up the Deep Space Nine story.
Nice. That's a I love that. That's a thing. Well, Matthew, this has been a really great discussion of, like I said, one of my favorite novels in the Deep Space Nine relaunch. You know, the return of Sisko, Kira on the cover in her Starfleet uniform. I mean, what's not to love?
Kira in her Starfleet uniform, that should have been my rating.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, Kira and Ro in a Starfleet uniform. There you go. That should have been the rating. But yeah, you're right. And luckily, it's not the only thing that we have been talking about here on Trek FM the past week. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Set this movie at the end of the 5-year mission. Skip ahead 5 years, you know, kind of like Dark Knight or whatever. And then say, okay, we've had all these adventures, blah, 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 blah. And now we're at the end. We're about to go home, you know, and it's been a fun time was had by all.
Earl Grey.
Again, you know, because it's January, my ship was shot beyond the bounds of normal interstellar travel to the center of the galaxy. But we were back in time for tea.
The Orb.
They're not even thinking about it at this point. Okay, how do we start the resistance? Yeah. How do we do all this?
Yeah.
Because they have become comfortable with where they are and thinking that they're doing all they can. And yet, we know, as the audience, that they're not.
To the journey! I want you to say right now in front of our friends, okay? And in front of me and the Lord Almighty, what is your favorite season?
Okay, this isn't the favorite season.
I want you to tell me what your favorite season is.
Daniel and Darren, promise we won't ever be like this.
The Ready Room.
So what's the deal? You know, does Tom have a dad we don't know about?
Apparently.
Because who was this guy that he was remembering as his dad?
Was that Nick Locarno's dad?
That was Nick Locarno's dad, yes.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
But I mean, here's the question, John. If you're living Fight Club, then, you know, we have to ask. If you could fight anyone, who would you fight?
William Shatner.
All right.
Literary Treks.
The main storyline here is the battle for the Vulcan soul. They are one of the most logical races, and yet they have an intensely spiritual aspect to them.
Axanar, the official podcast.
You were there. Mm. How long did we wait for them to try and reach that
footage? Oh, man. It was
10 minutes?
It was at least as long as the Enterprise penetrating V'ger's outer shield to getting into the actual machine core.
The 602 Club.
So, as far as the realism question is concerned, whether or not it's the right thing to do, it's the Marvel way to do it. I mean, I think that's the defining difference between Marvel and DC.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
You can check out these shows, find out what we have been talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe, and of course, beyond. You guys know you will find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you love what we do here and you would love to see this network grow and you want more people to enjoy the shows just as you do every week, man, I would love, ladies, gentlemen, anyone else listening, would love to have you share. You know, I want to make sure that we don't, have those aliens that are probably listening to us, Dan. I don't want them to feel left out. So we know they're listening to Trek FM. But if you would like to help us out, you can do some things that just help us rise in the rankings in certain places. Anywhere you get your podcasts, if you give us a rating and a star review, those things are great. Whether it's in iTunes or in Stitcher, any of those kind of places, that's awesome. In Apple's iTunes, you can also subscribe. That helps us out as well. You know we're everywhere. iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone. And of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from the website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way that's really great, if you love the network and you want to help it continue, to allow us to be able to put these podcasts, I guess, on the airwaves. Yeah, that works. Yeah. We're a listener-supported network, and we run on volunteer basis. We all do this because we just have a passion for bringing you great Star Trek content and content beyond that. So you can help us out. Go to patreon.com/trekfm. You can find all the current goals we have. We have different milestone contribution levels, some great perks, too. One of my great friends now came from Patreon, Norman Lau. Without Patreon and his support of the network, we may have never met and become such great friends. We literally talk every day. It's fantastic. So these are just some of the great things that come from helping us keep this going, finding more great people and bringing them into the family. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. You can contact us at trek.fm/contact. We'd love to have a voicemail from you. Sidebar on the show page, you can leave a voicemail or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. We're at Twitter at trekfm, Facebook, facebook.com/trekfm, which is also a great way to share content that you like on Trek FM with everybody else on your Facebook page, whether it's the shows that you like, maybe it's Literary Treks, The Orb, 602, To the Journey, Earl Grey, Warp 5, any of those shows that are coming out, you can share that content on your Facebook page and people will know, hey, you need to check this out because I like it. And of course, we've got the Babel Conference. It's our listeners-only discussion group, and it's really the best place to have a conversation these days online. Respectful, fun, talking about all sorts of things with Star Trek and everything we talk about in the 602 Club. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the search field on Facebook or go to the website at trek.fm, click discussion on the menu bar. We also have our Goodreads group, which is a great place to go. You can see all the bookshelves that we have there, of all the books that we've read previously covered, I've got it listed there too, what episode that book was featured in. We've got great conversations there. It shows you what's coming up in future shows because of what we're reading. This is a great place to be, so check us out on Goodreads. Dan, when you're not headed over to the local Ferengi embassy to get a cold root beer, where can we find you?
Well, you know, that Ferengi embassy is a lot of fun. You know, I tried my hand at the Dabo wheel and, well, lost a small fortune. But anyway.
That's to be expected.
I think those tables are rigged. Anyway, you can find me online. I have a Treklit book review website at treklit.com. I'm on Twitter at Treklit Reviews and on Facebook, facebook.com/treklitreviews. I think you're sensing a pattern here. Of course, I'm on the Babel conference commenting on things, posting interesting Star Trek news and all kinds of stuff from all over the Trek world there. And Matthew, when you're not sending a uniform to Ro to, you know, prompt her to stay in Starfleet where she belongs, where can we find you?
Dang it! How did anybody find out? I didn't even send her a note this time. Well, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm also on The Orb with Christopher Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine exclusively. So if you enjoy Deep Space Nine talk, that's the place to be. I do the 602 Club, which is just a great place. We get together every week with a brand new geeky topic, whether it's movies, comics, TV shows, things like that. It is so much fun, so I hope you'll join me there. And I do have my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and until next time, live long and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.